Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. Yesterday, we celebrated 1 year of my predecessor and mentor's passing from this side of the veil into eternal life. Al Cresta went to his eternal reward on June the 15th of 2024. I spent most of yesterday thinking about the lessons I'd learned from Al, the things he taught me, the things he modeled for me to learn, the method he helped shape my work into. And as grateful as I am to Al personally, it's not just me who remembers him fondly, not just for friendship and, in my case, spiritual fatherhood, but also for his contribution to the church, his work of evangelization. And so we're going to be joined by Doug Keck, who is a dear friend of Al's. And so he remembers the legacy of Al Cresta, both personally and professionally. And he remembers the contribution Al had in helping shape the work that we do on Catholic radio. So we talk about that with Doug Keck. We go on from there to talk about, well, an historical anniversary that gives us some context into this very bizarre milieu that we find ourselves in. I speak specifically about Lincoln accepting the Republican nomination and therefore giving his great A House Divided speech. This was on June the 16th of 1858. He stood before the Illinois Republican Convention. And this speech remains to this day both timely and prophetic. And there are many lessons that we can learn from it. In light of this past weekend and a lot of the lunacy that happened at the national level, it is important that we remember what binds us together as a nation has to be first constitutional, but even higher, transcendental ideals, appealing to the person of Jesus Christ and biblical revelation for the sake of grounding ourselves in sound morality and around a premise and a movement and a thrust for a national identity that's greater than any emotional explosion any one haphazard grassroots movement might have. And then finally, we speak with Dean John Czarnecki. June the 1st marked the 100th anniversary of Pierce versus Society of Sisters. This was the Supreme Court case that saved Catholic education in America. We talk about all this after the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Monday, June 16th. It's the Feast of St. John Francis Regis. Today's news brought to you by Visiting Angels, providing loving care and assistance for seniors in need. VisitingAngels.com. The Vatican has officially announced a canonization date for Blessed Carlo Acutis and Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. The two young Catholics will be canonized together September 7th. Blessed Acutis' canonization was originally scheduled for April 27th, but was postponed following Pope Francis' death on April 21st. Minnesota officials say they intend to pursue first-degree murder charges against the man accused of killing a state lawmaker and her husband. Hennepin County Attorney Mary Moriarty called for the end of political violence.
Political violence is prevalent, and the way we talk to and about each other has raised the temperature to unfathomable levels. We cannot continue on this way.
Vance Belcher was caught and arrested late Sunday night. President Trump says Iran wants to talk about a de-escalation with Israel.
They'd like to talk, but they should have done that before.
Speaking at the G7 summit in Canada, Trump said he gave Iran a 60-day window to bargain with the U.S. over their nuclear capabilities. Israel attacked the day after that deadline expired. Trump adding that he's heard through intermediators that Iran is interested in pulling back aggressions. The president said he thinks Iran wants to talk because Israel is doing so well right now. And the U.S. Supreme Court has ordered the New York Court of Appeals to revisit a case concerning a mandate that required employers to cover abortions in health insurance plans. State courts upheld that mandate in 2017, and the Supreme Court reversed those rulings in 2021. However, New York's Court of Appeals ignored the Supreme Court's ruling, claiming the case was inapplicable. From your Ave Maria Radio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter, joined by Doug Keck of EWTN to talk about the legacy of Al Cresta as we commemorate 1 year of his passing from this side of the veil into his eternal reward. Doug, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Oh, it's always great to be with you, Marcus. Thank you.
I greatly enjoy your insight, and this topic is no different. Al and you had so many conversations and rubbing shoulders with each other in building the great work of Catholic media. So share with us Al's presence in your life and what that did for EWTN and the work of Catholic
Education. Well, it was interesting. You mentioned shoulders, obviously. You know, he had broad shoulders and really built the Ave Maria radio on those shoulders. And, you know, it's funny, the first time I actually met Al or saw Al, he was in the lobby at EWTN, and I didn't know him. And this was before 03, because it was before he had lost his leg. And I kind of saw, I knew his name from radio but hadn't really dealt with him. And I saw him and I was thinking, get him on Bookmark and have him on the show. And then the next thing I know, you know, he was deathly ill. And I mean, a lot of us, I hate to say, counted him out, thought that what was going on was not going to be able to be fixed, at least enough for him to live, even though, you know, he had to give up his leg for that. So it was kind of that was my introduction to Al, and then I kind of got to know him through the radio conferences we would have, and back then, you know, not only Mike would be with him many times, of course, but I can't think of the young man's name who died of brain cancer.
Oh, Nick Tom.
Nick Tom, who used to be with him all the time. What a sweetheart of a guy.
Yeah.
And he used to be initially with Al. And one of the things is Al and I just kind of clicked. And any time that we had the radio conference there, we always made sure the two of us got off to the side and would either would have lunch together and that, just to kind of talk and ask each other's opinions on different things, etc. I was always pleased that he was interested in my opinions. And I always thought, you know, Al had a wonderful mix of like the ad always said for her, the beginning of his show, you know, kind of a Bible in one hand and the Wall Street Journal in the other hand and New York Times. He had a great grasp of current events, but, you know, had a deep, deep understanding of the biblical faith and the Catholic faith, having, you know, and being a guy, you know, like a Mother Angelica and people who, you know, he didn't just walk into being a Catholic, so to speak. I mean, he was a guy who, you know, liked playing the guitar, wanted to be in rock bands, was in rock bands, left when he was 16, was living on the street. You know, it's kind of the Woodstock era. You know, went into, you know, kind of like the New Age spirituality of those days.
Yeah.
And you know, found his way, obviously, to a Bible church, et cetera, and then ultimately to Catholicism. So, you know, he had a lot of experience and a lot of street cred.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he talked about things about related to the faith, he wasn't talking about it with this kind of Pollyanna, you know, view of things that somehow all you do is do this and everything's wonderful. And,
right.
You know, and that, you know, life shouldn't be that hard because you're a believer, instead of saying, no, what the faith gives you is the strength to deal with all these problems that you're going to be dealing with going forward. And if anything, at times, I hate to say it, but it does seem to be like, you know, quoting Teresa of Avila, we all do it all the time, you know, when she kind of fell in the mud. She said, Lord, if this is how you treat your friends, then when do you have so few? Because it does seem that many times the people you run into who are kind of dedicating their lives to the Lord and stuff are either have come out of situations that were semi-horrific or, you know, highly problematic or caused a lot of pain and sorrow, or themselves are after the fact going through those kinds of things in their lives. And so it's clearly not the kind of health and wealth gospel that some of the TBN preachers and other preachers putting this idea that somehow you name it and claim it, and you know, you know, you're in the Lord and you're saved, and you know, and if you're suffering, it's because it's your fault. You don't have a strong enough faith or enough prayer life or something, which is ridiculous. Our Lord said that about the people who were killed in the tower that fell down. Mm. He said, "Do you think those people were bigger sinners than anybody else?" I mean, so you understand that those things are not tied together.
You know, you're reminding me, Doug, of how Al, whenever asked about his leg and his suffering, would say, you know, a lot of people say, suffering, why me? My question is, why not me? What?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that puts into perspective the way he conducted his life as an evangelist.
Absolutely. That's a quote that I know as well from Benedict Rochelle. Not his version would say, not why. You know, don't ask why, ask what. Meaning, not why this happened to me, but what am I supposed to do with this now? How can I move forward with this in my life? And Al took that to and rolled forward, so to speak. And was great, and was a happy warrior in the sense of loving Jesus and the faith and his family, and caring about Catholic Radio, and working tirelessly for its benefits. He could have rolled himself up and said, "Oh, I feel bad for myself," or, right, "You know, I've done my bit already. Let somebody else do it." But he didn't. He really poured out every ounce he had, because he thought, you know, revival, evangelization were what he was called to do, and also what he needed to do, and what the Lord was expecting from him.
And what the Lord expected from Al was that he showed up, and Al believed, he told that to me all the time, "I show up, I do the work, because this is important work." Tell us about that, Doug, because you live by that too.
Well, it's one of those things where you kind of are, you're just doing the best you can.
Yeah.
And I think we kind of got that from Mother Angelica. She always said, "I'm just a donkey pulling the cart," you know. And one time, and people would always say, "Well, gee, how come, Mother, you succeeded with your network when the bishops didn't?" And there's lots of technical, Mother distributed to the public and not through the church, and it wasn't controlled by the bishops, in which case there wasn't as bureaucratic, and so she could do different programming. And Mother's answer was, "No, it's very simple. God gave me this mission, and he didn't give this to the bishops, and that's why it succeeded." And so that's the whole thing. Al was given that mission for Catholic Radio in Ave Maria, and that's why he was focused on that, because that's what he was being asked to do. We all have particular charisms, and I think Al was doing that only for Ave Maria Radio, but for all of Catholic Radio. He was involved with the Catholic Radio Association. He and I were on the board for a while when that existed, in a form that we were all working with at the time, and certainly, I was one of the ones who with him, who kind of worked out the partnership for us to become partners on some of the programs on Ave Maria Radio. He invited me to be on the board. So I've been on the board with he and with Mike Jones for many years, and, great opportunity to work with some fine people. Al was a guy, I can't believe he's gone a year already.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, you meet so many great people, as you go through this, sometimes, you can't believe that are gone, like Mother or Benedict Rochelle or Andrew Apostoli, Father Brian Milady, who just passed away.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, Al Cresta, it's just amazing how many, and the upside is what you indicated, is there, they've gone to the other side, and God willing, they're praying for us.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, such giants in the faith. So you're a student of history as well, Doug.
Mm-hmm.
Al, and you look at history, but you look at our current situation, where we came from, but you apply the words of Jesus and Scripture to that, because that is the remedy. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, I think, like with anything, I think working with Father Spitzer on the show kind of reinforced kind of what Al brought, which was a reasonableness to the faith and an understanding of the faith, and the fact that what the great thing about the Catholic faith is it totally makes sense.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't run away from those things, because everything that the Church teaches is grounded in a rational understanding.
My guest, Doug Keck, President and CEO of EWTN. We'll be talking about the legacy of the late, great Al Cresta. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
resetting your password, unsubscribing from emails, printing anything. Why are simple things sometimes so complicated? Thankfully, with an auto owner's insurance independent agent, getting the right coverage for your business doesn't have to be one of them, so you can get back to more important things, like learning how that printer works. That's simple human sense.
Call Choice Insurance Agency at 734-641-4200.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents, and despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Hello, Steve Ray here from Footprints of God Pilgrimages. Want to celebrate some amazing anniversaries this year in France? We'll visit Normandy Beach to celebrate our heroic military for the 80th anniversary of D-Day. Also, the 100th anniversary of the canonization of St. Teresa of Lisieux. Join us this October for our Saints and Shrines of France and a visit to the newly renovated Notre Dame Cathedral.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at AveMariaRadio.net. Location, location, location. These are the three most important factors in real estate. The same might be said for colleges. Trudging through snow to get to an 8 a.m. statistics class is a much different experience than breezing by a palm tree to the raucous applause of a laughing gull. With the average temperature of 84 degrees and wetland nature as your backdrop, it's no wonder students tend to stay once they visit our campus. Ave Maria University, your future location, location, location. Visit avemaria.edu.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Vita. On June the 16th, 1858, Abraham Lincoln stood before the Illinois Republican Convention, and he delivered what remains one of the most prophetic and piercing political speeches in American history. "A house divided against itself cannot stand," he declared. He borrowed the words from Christ himself, the Gospel of Mark, chapter 3, verse 25. With the solemn warning, Lincoln made it clear that the nation could not endure permanently, half slave and half free. It must become all one thing or all the other. Lincoln's insight was not just theological and moral, it was political philosophy, rooted in natural law and self-evident truths. Nearly 160 years later, on June the 16th, 2015, Donald J. Trump descended the golden escalator at Trump Tower to announce his candidacy for president. It was a dramatically different tone, but against a strikingly similar backdrop: division, disillusionment, despair. Trump pierced the national conscience by naming realities long ignored by the political class at the time because of identity politics. The juxtaposition of these two moments, separated by over a century and a half, invites reflection not on personalities but on principles, which I believe is the key for all of us to ground ourselves. Both men, Lincoln and Trump, however different in temperament, moral formation, and execution in terms of their conduct, rose to national prominence by diagnosing deep fractures in the American soul. Back then it was slavery, now it is identity politics, moral relativism, a progressivist repudiation of natural law that has turned disagreement into division, diversity into tribalism, and rights into weapons. The American house is once again divided, not over sectional geography, but over first principles. Lincoln's speech in 1858 was not a call to civil war. It wasn't even a proposal for compromise. It was a sober recognition: a nation cannot survive when it institutionalizes contradiction. Either opponents of slavery will arrest the further spread of it, or its advocates will push it forward till it shall become lawful in all the states, old as well as new. Obviously, Lincoln was on the right side of history on that question, because it wasn't a mere political forecast, it was a theological and philosophical one. Truth cannot peacefully coexist with its denial. So Lincoln grounded this insight in Scripture, quoting the words of Jesus Christ, "A house divided against itself cannot stand." Unlike many today who weaponize Scripture for political ends,
Lincoln submitted the political to Christ and to morality. He believed in the universality of human dignity. Nothing stamped with the divine image and likeness was sent into the world to be trodden on, he once said. So it's difficult to imagine such language coming from a modern politician, because it presupposes an understanding of the imago Dei, the image of God, but also a common acknowledgement of God himself. Lincoln did not expect the house to fall. He did expect the division to end. He said this, I do not expect the union to be dissolved. I do not expect the house to fall, but I do expect it will cease to be divided. Today you and I must ask, cease to be divided around what? Slavery has been abolished, but new contradictions have arisen, most notably over what it means to be human, to be free, to be a citizen, and to be a family. When Lincoln fought against the dehumanizing ideology of racial slavery, we now find ourselves in the grip of new dehumanizing ideologies, identity politics. And this modern movement, particularly since the Obama administration, we saw it start even before, but the Obama administration catalyzed it, has reshaped American discourse by prioritizing tribal categories, so demographic categories, race, gender, sexual orientation, class, over moral superiority in action, character, and shared citizenship. Obama, to his credit, began his presidency with the promise of hope and unity, but during his administration, the ideological emphasis on group identity over common good accelerated. In 2015, the same year Trump launched his campaign, the Supreme Court handed down Obergefell versus Hodges. This redefined the institution of marriage, removed it from its natural and biblical moorings. So what had up till that point been societally recognized as a covenantal bond rooted in natural law and sacramental theology was judicially reduced to a kind of personally customizable lifestyle arrangement, declared valid solely by justices of the peace and subjective wills of consenting adults. In this cultural climate, personal identity is no longer a discovery of one's place in the order of God's plan in the cosmos, it is an assertion of self-will against the perceived constraints of God. Gender is declared fluid, race is weaponized, lived experiences trump objective truth. To disagree is to be called a bigot and to be accused of committing violence. To question is to be canceled. To affirm natural law is to be labeled oppressive. This worldview is diametrically opposed to Lincoln's. Lincoln called for reason, the slow yet sure influence of moral principle. He did not deny the existence of difference, far from it. He insisted that the American experiment was possible only when rooted in moral truth, not shifting feelings. He famously asked, if we could first know where we are and whither we are tending, we could then better judge what to do and how to do it. And that's why I frequently ask the question, where did we come from and where are we right now and where are we going? Because we no longer know the answer to those questions. We have severed our nation's moral compass, which is God. On June the 16th of 2015, when Trump launched his bid for the presidency, it was with a brash and controversial speech. It defied political decorum. But what many dismissed as the ramblings of a reality TV star apparently struck a chord with millions. His rhetoric was blunt, but it was a rude awakening to the genteel elite who had grown complacent in their established echo chambers. And the echo chamber was one of progressivism, liberalism, a repudiation of all those things that made America great, literally natural law and nature and nature's God. Lincoln appealed to the conscience and moral law. Trump appealed to grievance and disruption. But both men were responding to crisis. Trump's announcement was not an intellectual treatise, but it was a kind of indictment. We brought this on ourselves. Indictment of a political establishment that was refusing to defend the unborn, secure the border, recognize the dignity of the human person, uphold marriage, protect religious liberty. He touched the nerves of a population that was tired of being lectured by our political elite that we had to be tolerant while our deepest convictions were being ridiculed. This isn't to say Trump is our champion, because Trump is no Lincoln, either in prose or in principle. Let's make that clear. But Trump was giving voice to those who sensed that America had lost its sociopolitical center. The house was coming apart at the seams in terms of foundational principles and beliefs. The populist movement that followed wasn't born in hatred, but the media portrays it as such. It was actually a deep desire for restoration, even that language, make America great again. I'm not defending the political movement, but it's a cry to reclaim a longing for moral clarity and civic sanity. If the American house is to be reunited, it must be done on the basis of truth, moral, theological, and anthropological reality. The divisions of our age are not over tax rates or zoning laws, even though some of these are crucial questions. They're actually over life, death, family, what it means to be human. The foundational right is life. There can't be any unity if we deny the personhood of the child in the womb. These are the times that try men's souls, Thomas Paine wrote, but they're also the times that reveal the soul of a nation. The church teaches us the perennial gospel about the dignity of the human person from the moment of natural conception. When states begin to authorize the killing of the elderly, the disabled, and depressed under the guise of compromise and autonomy, society has guised murder with the mask of mercy. And charity toward the stranger, while a true biblical mandate, does not negate rule of law. The catechism is very clear. So yes, we welcome the immigrant, but we also have the right as a sovereign nation to enforce just laws. In the face of all of this, as we take a look at all these rising issues, the transhumanist issue, the American house is fractured and weary, but it won't endure if we avoid hard truths. Once again, this nation must bow to the lordship of Jesus Christ, apart from whom no house can stand. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes, without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Which of the seven sacraments has been especially instituted by Christ to aid those who are being tried by serious illness? It is the sacrament called the anointing of the sick. This sacrament was particularly promulgated by the Apostle James, who said, "Is anyone among you sick? Let him call the priests of the church, and let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer of faith will save the sick man, and the Lord will raise him up, and if he has committed sins, he will be forgiven." Over the centuries, the sacrament came to be used on those who were dying and was called extramunction. But in this day and age, it is seen not as a sacrament strictly for those who are near death, but also those who are gravely ill, in the hope they will recover. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism. Thank you for listening.
Fire on the Earth's Peter Herbeck. Without the light that comes from Christ, we walk in darkness. And darkness is a way of describing this fallen world in which we don't know why we're here even. We can't touch meaning because we ultimately can't see God, and we can't be satisfied because we were made for God. We were made as this entire creation. The whole cosmos was made to the glory of God. It all exists to reveal the glory and the majesty, the beauty, the complexity, the creative love and power of God. And all of it gives praise to Him, except for fallen angels and rebellious human hearts. We're made literally to live for the glory of God, to worship Him, to give thanks to Him. That's what heaven is. It's not just a big prayer meeting, but it is the full celebration of free souls and creatures just overwhelmed by the majesty and beauty of God. And we're sharing in it. We're not just watching it like we do on a movie that when it's over, we're in it. We're sharing in the life. And it's total and absolute fulfillment. We can't hardly even imagine what that's like. The best we can do in this world is to have some measure of distraction or something that makes me feel good temporarily. Or temporary goals that we kind of have hope in. Those intermediate goals are good goals, but they don't solve the big problem. They don't produce genuine heart that brings peace to the soul and transformation.
Peter Herbeck spreads fire on the earth, weekday mornings at 6:30 and again at 11:45 on Ave Maria Radio.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at avemaria.com. That's avemaria.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. June the 1st marked the 100th anniversary of Pierce versus Society of Sisters. Now, this was a landmark Supreme Court case that preserved Catholic education in America and established the foundation for present-day legal discourse on parental rights and school choice. We look back on this pivotal case with Dean John Zarnetsky. John Zarnetsky, like I mentioned, is Dean of the Ave Maria School of Law and no stranger to this program. John, great to speak with you again. How are you?
Marcus, I'm doing very well, and as always, it's quite a privilege to be with you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you for accepting the invitation. This is a crucial conversation, and I was looking forward to talking about this with you. But before we go forward, considering all the good work that's being done at the level of the Supreme Court, I want to invite you to just educate our listeners on the wondrous mission of Ave Maria School of Law and all the good that's taking place there in forming a new generation of virtuous lawyers.
Well, thank you for that opportunity, Marcus. It happens to be my favorite subject, which won't surprise you. Ave Maria School of Law is the only Newman Guide law school in the country, which means we have the imprimatur as being faithful to the Roman Catholic Church in our community and in our teaching. We are dedicated to preserving the natural law and the truth about the human person, and that is what, as St. John Paul II instructed Catholic institutions to do, and that is what informs our training of lawyers. We're a law school, not a seminary, but our view is if you don't understand the human person, then how can you understand, make, and interpret law?
You know, that's a brilliant setup for us to think rightly about law as it governs human flourishing in a society, and that paves the way for us to think about this. Well, the case, Oregon passed the Compulsory Education Act in 1922. It wasn't until 1925 that we finally got the verdict. So, again, for the sake of our listeners, just help them understand what this case was about and why was it so crucial.
It's absolutely fascinating. Of course, you and I always talk about fascinating cases. Pierce versus Society of Sisters, the whole name is Sisters of the Holy Names of Jesus and Mary, an order which I believe still exists. This case is was about whether or not parents could be forced by statute to send their kids from the ages of 8 to 16 to public schools. By forced, I mean that was the only option open to parents. As you said, this was an Oregon law, and the initial statute, as I understand it, as I read the case, didn't contain this provision about only public education. It was added later. Most commentators, I'm not a historian, but most commentators believe this was pretty clearly a shot at Catholic immigrants at the time. And it was, I think, part and parcel of that period in our history where there were, I would say, extraordinary efforts, legally speaking, to do something, quote unquote, about all these Catholics that were coming into the country. So that's the setup for the case. And it's such a remarkable case because, well, for several reasons. First of all, the court unanimously, in an opinion by a justice named McReynolds, struck down that Oregon statute. So you have a unanimous U.S. Supreme Court saying that the state simply cannot force parents to send kids to public schools. The state could force parents to send kids to school. That wasn't at issue.
Mm-hmm.
But they couldn't force kids into public schools. In other words, private schools could continue to exist after this in Oregon and the rest of the country. I think at the risk of going on too long here, Marcus, the absolutely fascinating thing and about the opinion was its basis. Usually the court points to this or that. This is a case that established really as a matter of liberty,
mm-hmm.
as a matter of, frankly, of what we would call natural law, though that phrase was not used, I want to emphasize,
right.
that parents have a natural law right, founded in liberty, to raise their children as they see fit. The famous quote, which will probably ring bells with your audience, even if they didn't know the source, Justice McReynolds said, quote, "The child is not the mere creature of the state," period. So crucial, I think, to our society, even today, or not even today, still today, the child is not the mere creature of the state. In how many respects do we see people trying to indeed turn children, even today, mm-hmm. into creatures of the state in service of a uniform ideology?
Right.
And so McReynolds simply stated that, and it was unanimously agreed to by his colleagues. That's what we call natural law. He didn't say the Constitution doesn't mm-hmm. talk about education, much less, you know, whether children are creatures of the state. He just simply said, the child is not the creature of the state. The child is in the care of, and he always used the phrase, fit parents. So that case has never been overruled. It's an example, as I said, of the court using natural law theories, which for, you know, somewhat complicated reason, the court has very, very rarely done. And they stopped using any type of common law reasoning, I would say, probably sometime in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
And sorry, I went on at some length there. But,
no, I appreciate
it. So crucial.
If I may pick out an earlier part of that answer, just very briefly. Like you mentioned, it seems like the legislation, the Compulsory Education Act, was targeting especially Catholic immigrants. You think about the people who were sponsoring the act, the Ku Klux Klan, a series of other anti-Catholic groups. Without reading too much into it, would it be safe to say that the targeted decision here, or at least the targeted direction here, was to eliminate parochial and private education, especially from a Catholic religious perspective?
Yes, I think it is fair to say, again, I'm not a historian, but I think that was the clear intent.
Mm-hmm.
I will add that there was another academy that was part of the case that raises the question, was it just
right.
Catholic schools? But I think most people, most commentary on this indicates that this was part of an effort to, at least in Oregon at the time, to eliminate parochial schools.
Yeah, it was a Hill Military Academy, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yes.
And so going back then to what you just quoted, Justice McReynolds' opinion, the quote from the opinion, His language throughout the opinion seems to appeal, like you mentioned, to natural law with an understanding of what Jefferson would call nature and nature's God. He talks about high duty. He talks about the destiny of the child, the preparation of the child for additional obligations. This isn't a utilitarian judgment and opinion here. There's a recognition that there's something in the child that's greater than even the state itself.
And not just the recognition, but that it deserves to be enshrined in law.
Right.
And that is so fascinating because eventually, and by the way, this reasoning has been used very limited for a right to marriage, right to have children, and then later in marital privacy. I hear the music.
Yeah.
We can keep talking about that after.
We're going to pick up this conversation on the other side of the break. I'm talking with Dean John Czarnecki of the Ave Maria School of Law. We are talking about Pierce versus Society of Sisters, celebrating its 100th anniversary and why it's pivotal to our country. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
The Wine Palace in Livonia is a proud sponsor of Ave Maria Radio. The Wine Palace is a family-owned business for over 60 years where customers come in for a great service. The 9,000-square-foot store includes a humidor, specialty wine room, and a rare and collectible spirits room. We have the largest selection of spirits in the state at the most competitive prices. Ask for one of the brothers, Cliff or Kelly, and thank them for their strong support of Catholic Radio. Delivery is available. Please visit the Wine Palace at I-96 in Middlebelt or at winepalacemi.com.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
On the next Epiphany.
Hi, Vanessa Denha-Garmo here. Mike Tenbush drops by the studio to chat about International Samaritan, a ministry dedicated to helping people break out of poverty worldwide. We also check in with Kelly Solomon to discuss the latest news out of the Cardinal Newman Society.
Epiphany, weekdays at noon on Ave Maria Radio.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Parents often resort to scolding, coaxing, or even bribing to get our kids to help with household chores. But what if I told you there's a more effective approach? The next time your child does anything helpful, pause to appreciate them. Say something like, "Hey, I noticed you put away your dirty dishes without being asked. Thanks for that. It's really thoughtful and responsible of you." You can even put a cherry on the top of your gratitude with a warm hug, a fist bump, or some other sign of affection. A few words of thanks are much more powerful than a whole paragraph of nagging or criticizing. Over time, you'll notice that these expressions of gratitude not only encourage more helpfulness from your kids, but more gratitude too. Get more great parenting tips at CatholicHOM.com or check out our books, Parenting Your Kids with Grace or Parenting Your Teens and Tweens with Grace. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
You can hear Ave Maria Radio from your home computer or your smartphone, where you can access Ave Maria Radio from anywhere in the world, regardless of the time of day. All you need to do is download the Ave Maria Radio app from the App Store, Google Play, or Galaxy Store. You never have to lose signal. You never have to miss your favorite program ever again. It's what you want and how you want it. And with the Ave Maria Radio archives, it's available when you want it most. The Ave Maria Radio app, heard where radios aren't available.
Location, location, location. These are the three most important factors in real estate. The same might be said for colleges. Trudging through snow to get to an 8 a.m. statistics class is a much different experience than breezing by a palm tree to the raucous applause of a laughing gull. With the average temperature of 84 degrees and wetland nature as your backdrop, it's no wonder students tend to stay once they visit our campus. Ave Maria University, your future location, location, location. Visit avemaria.edu.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. I'm speaking with Dean John Zarnetsky, who is Dean of the Ave Maria School of Law, a sister school of my alma mater, Ave Maria University. And it's a wondrous place that forms you in the legal tradition of the United States, but also from the perspective and grounding of church teaching and natural law. So, John, you were cut off by the music earlier, but you were finishing your thought about the law's recognition of the transcendence of the dignity of the child as a human person over and above the rights of the state.
Yes, thank you, Marcus. What I was leading to was our nation in the Declaration itself was founded. It was born of an idea of natural law and natural rights. Jefferson so eloquently said that. But when we come to the Constitution, the founders did not enumerate all of those natural law rights. Mm-hmm. So the question is, can the Supreme Court identify such rights and protect them? The Ninth Amendment to the Constitution says that the enumeration of rights in this Constitution will not disparage any other rights that the people have. And so the question that the court starts grappling with in this period, in the 20s through the 70s, is, okay, let's agree, or if we can agree that there's a natural law, what are its contours?
Right.
And who gets to say? And so this is a wonderful case. I agree with it wholeheartedly, and I think it's no coincidence that it's still good law. And maybe we'll come to that in a minute.
Go ahead, please.
I was just going to say, we end up in the 1970s with natural law-like reasoning. Mm-hmm. In fact, this case was cited in Roe versus Wade, right, finding somehow that there's a natural law right to abortion. And then much later, I believe it was the Obergefell case, where you have Justice Kennedy saying that the purpose of life is self—I can't even articulate
what
he meant. Self-invention in sexuality. So the problem with reading the natural law into the Constitution is who gets to discern what it is. So the Supreme Court, I just want to very briefly say, without putting your audience to sleep, the Supreme Court makes a turn in its jurisprudence over time, through again today, but starting, you know, about 10 years after this case, where instead of defining natural law, you know, out of whole cloth, they simply stick to the 10 amendments of the Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
And they're saying that those are the sources of natural law. We're not going to go beyond what the Bill of Rights says. It's just a fascinating development. At least by doing that, they limited themselves from inventing things that, frankly, would violate the natural law in the name of the natural law.
Right. And like you mentioned, Justice Kennedy's statement in the Obergefell case was baffling, to say the least. It demonstrated a clear departure from what the natural law actually calls for. But without branching too much into that poor grasp and application of natural law language, like you mentioned, this particular case, Pierce versus Society of Sisters, appeals to, like you, the text here, especially the Bill of Rights. So it draws from the 14th Amendment and draws particularly with the language of substantive due process. Tell us about why that's so important for parents of children.
Well, let me just do 1 minute or 30 seconds on substantive due process.
Yes, please.
That's an idea that gained its ascendancy starting around this time through the New Deal, where the court would read natural law rights into the Constitution through the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, which says states shall not deprive people of their liberty without due process of law. So the court would ask itself, well, what are the contours of liberty? One contour, one part of liberty is the liberty to raise your kids.
Yep.
Here's what the problem was with substantive due process. Justices like Justice McReynolds started saying, well, you know, liberty also includes liberty of contract. So when the legislature was passing regulation of businesses, they were struck down by the court for the same reason as we see in this case. It infringes on liberty. And FDR threatened to pack the court with another six justices, and one of the justices, not McReynolds, changed his vote, and that was the death knell for substantive due process on the court. It's called a switch in time, save nine, meaning one justice switched and it saved the court as a nine justice court rather than being packed. Anyway, sorry for the
discourse
on history. But that's what ended, for the most part, the court looking at what are the contours of liberty. Now, having said all of that, this case has never been overruled, and there is a case, I believe it's pending in the Supreme Court now, so we should have a decision sometime in the next couple months, called Mahmoud versus Maryland.
Yeah.
And it's so fascinating because, you know, 100 years, but the issues are the same. Muslim parents in Maryland assert that they have a right to have their child opt out of education regarding transgenderism and homosexuality in the public schools. And they say the child is not the mere creature of the state. We object. And that case has found its way. And of course, Maryland argues, no, your child must submit to this. The Beckett Fund, which I'm sure your audience is quite familiar with their excellent work, the Beckett Fund stepped up. And I believe they're the ones that argued before the Supreme Court this case on behalf of those Muslim parents. So good for the Beckett Fund and good for the continuing viability of this case.
And in arguing for the continued viability, this is really pragmatically reflective for the sake of parents listening right now. This was a landmark case that gives parents a standing up to the level of even the Supreme Court for arguing for school choice and therefore the right to educate their children as they discern fit.
Absolutely. Absolutely correct. And not all cases from 100 years ago are still standing and still cited. I think I took a quick look around preparing to speak with you today, and I think this case has been cited 70 or 100 times by the court itself. So that is a significant precedent with continuing viability and importance.
And there have been many cases where, even though not directly cited, I think we can understand a kind of principled appeal to Pierce. In 2020, there was Espinoza versus Montana, and I think the premise was about the same, you know, religious schools, equal protection, funding rights, and it's amazing we're going to keep seeing attacks at this front when we know full well that this nation was founded on the premise of religious liberty, which includes the formation of the conscience of children by parents.
Well, absolutely. I forget, was it perhaps the Jesuit order that said, give me a boy at seven and I'll...
Don Bosco, am I right?
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. No, it was the great saint. I apologize. And the other side, let's put it that way, quote, the other side, that lesson is not lost on them. And so there is this continuing effort. To capture the youth through the mechanism of public schools, because public education is compulsory for good reasons, I think, for our society, but it can also, like any tool, be misused. And we see these efforts.
And that's why the concerns are valid in terms of state overreach, or even the language of outright state owning the children, children being quote-unquote mere creatures of the state. That's precisely what a nation of people who possess life, liberty, and the ownership of property, pursuit of happiness, that's precisely what we get to stand against in terms of a tyrannical government.
Absolutely. And may I just throw in one little interesting fact, if I have a moment. Justice McReynolds, who wrote this opinion for a unanimous Supreme Court, appears to have been, perhaps, in a whole history of rogues, the most dislikable U.S. Supreme Court justice of all time. Mm. No other justices attended his funeral. People shunned him. He was a virulent anti-Semite. He hated everybody. I think William Howard Taft, the Chief Justice, actually said that. And yet he wrote this opinion standing up for the right of Catholic parents to their children and their children's development. On the other hand, you know, there are other justices from approximately the same time. Hugo Black is one of them, who was very popular and a senator, and he's still a hero of law professors, and not me, but most law professors love Hugo Black. And Hugo Black was a member of the Ku Klux Klan and was virulently anti-Catholic. I think he either said or wrote at some point that he was a member of the Klan not so much because of racial issues, but because of the Catholic Church. And he wanted to fight against the church.
Right.
So it's so strange how God has such a sense of humor, the instruments that he uses. McReynolds, thoroughly dislikable and disliked, he was the one that wrote this great opinion vindicating natural law.
John, I always enjoy our exchanges. Thank you so much for making the time to speak with us.
My pleasure, Marcus.
My guest has been Dean John Zarnetsky of the Ave Maria School of Law. We've been talking about the 100th anniversary of Pierce versus Society of Sisters. This was a landmark case. It's one of the main legal reasons why we get to fight for school choice and religious education of our children. Thank you for joining us. I'm Marcus Peter.